That's the issue, that our brains evolved for survival, not for modern success. And survival, for most of human history, it meant avoiding risk and conserving energy. And that's what our brain wants us to do even today. But today's challenges often require completely opposite behaviors, like a sustained effort and long-term thinking.
Hi, and welcome to Lead Well.
My guest today is Andres Kusk. Andres is a 7-time World Pentamind champion, a game theory professor, and a business executive. And what intrigued me about your work, Andres, is that you don't talk about success in terms of motivation and productivity hacks, but instead you look at the hidden assumptions and thinking patterns that influence our decisions, often without us even noticing. And you just have written a book, Unlocking the Success Puzzle, where you explore the cognitive biases and mental shortcuts that either help us move forward or keep us stuck. And so today we'll explore what that means for all of us in everyday life. Welcome. Welcome, Andres.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So let me ask one question right away, because you talk about beliefs that we have and decisions that we make. So what belief about yourself took you the longest to let go of?
I think one belief that I had that I think a lot of people have is overestimating my opponents or my goals or my tasks, thinking they are more difficult than they actually are. A good example is from my mind sports career. When I was younger, then for a long time, I made this mistake that when I faced a much higher rated opponent, I didn't really believe in my chances. I thought that they are so much better than me that I cannot beat them anyway. And the best I can do is to just play for a draw. And this mindset made me overly cautious. And if you are overly cautious, then you miss many opportunities. And this is exactly what happened. And so I ended up losing most of those games. But the insight from this is not that I lost to higher rated players, but because sometimes they indeed were stronger than me and I should have lost them anyways. But sometimes I should not have lost them, and I only lost because this my belief that I cannot win anyways caused me to underperform. So it was this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that I thought that I'm inferior, and this belief itself worked as my disadvantage.
Okay, so you're saying not focusing on the others and thinking that they are better than myself, but just focusing on yourself and giving
best. Actually, in mind sports, there is even a term for this. It's called playing the opponent instead of playing the position. And you obviously should do the complete opposite. You should play the position. It's a very common mistake.
So what happens during those mind games? What are you doing there? What is that all about?
My favorite mind sports discipline is called the pentamind, which is basically the overall, the combined competition, combining very different mind sports disciplines. So this is where my expertise mainly lies. So basically you're playing a lot of mind sports disciplines like chess, checkers, poker, bridge. Also like those newer Euro games like Catan and Carcassonne, and eventually you combine the results over all of them and the winner is determined.
Okay, wow, that's so intriguing. And then you're also a professor for game theory. So you put the practice into theory then.
Exactly. I'm not anymore. I was the professor teaching game theory. This was already more than 10 years ago. So I'm not doing this anymore, but this definitely... Those two sides helped each other, teaching and at the same time studying the theory and practicing it in real life, in mind sports. It was a very fascinating time doing those two in parallel. At some moment, I really did those two in parallel, working in the uni and playing mind sports professionally. And it was really fascinating to see how those two complement each other rather well.
It's fascinating. And the way you talk about you were limiting yourself because you had beliefs about others that were intimidating. So where do you see the difference between a real limitation and a limitation story that you're telling yourself?
I believe that a lot of times, actually, the limitation is just imagined. For example, when people think in their heads about talent and when they talk about talent, then mostly it is in the framework of, I don't have enough talent, therefore I cannot do this or that. For example, if you try out something new and you face early difficulties or setbacks, then very common interpretation is that I'm just not suited for this. And obviously, if you allow this kind of interpretation to set in, then your motivation decreases. You start putting in less effort and sometimes you stop altogether. And that's the real limitation. The limitation is not that you lack talent. The limitation that is that you believe that you lack talent, because in reality, early phases of learning are always difficult and they are equal difficult for everyone. And the difference is not that some of us are talented and others are not. The difference is that some people do not interpret early difficulty as a signal to stop, and therefore they continue and eventually they succeed. So I think this is definitely one of the differences between what do we think is limitation and what is just imagined limitation.
It reminds me a lot of Carol Dweck's work, where she says that when she worked with children and gave them some tasks to do, some really impossible to do, but there were children that said, oh, great, I can investigate and I can play with this and I can get involved in this. And others said, okay, no, I'm not touching it because I will not be able to do it. So that reminds me a lot of her work.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a very good example. People have this kind of thinking distortion. If something is difficult, this is a signal that they lack ability, but it's really not, because most of the time when we face those difficulties, we compare ourselves with somebody else who is successful in the same field, but we don't really realize that we are right now in the very beginning of our learning phase and they faced the same phase already long time ago. Right now they have studied and practiced this field long time, and that is the reason why they are so successful. When they were in the same place in their learning curve as we are right now, they faced exactly the same difficulties. This, usually you don't think like this.
Yeah, that's right. So you're saying that sometimes we are even more objective about other people and their successes than our own. We see that on a different...
Exactly. I think this is another very typical thinking error or cognitive distortion, that we are very bad judging our own situation or our own life. For example, let's say there is someone else who is facing the exact same issue that we are dealing with, we very often immediately see that they should make a significant change to improve their situation. But when it comes to our own lives, then we tend to hesitate and justify and downplay the problem. So it's very significant difference between how well we are quite often able to judge or evaluate other people's situation, and at the same time we can be very poor judging our own. Actually, I have a funny story. Very recently I overheard two colleagues of mine discussing the unfortunate situation in their work life. They belonged to the same team and they had the same boss, and basically they were complaining about a lot of issues they had, and mainly they were related to the boss, and both of them tried to convince the other one that the situation is so bad that the other one has to leave. But neither of them actually was able to make inner peace with themselves, to accept that they also actually face the exact same situation. And if they tell their colleague that they should leave, then they should give the exact same advice to themselves. They were not able to do it because they were emotionally engaged with the situation. So that's why I think this is a kind of emotional closeness that distorts our evaluation when we judge our own situation.
Yeah, and maybe also this resistance to change and the not wanting to change, keeping things as they are as long as it's bearable.
Yes, exactly, because change means effort and it also means uncertainty. Even if our current situation is barely bearable, it's familiar, and evolutionarily our brains evolved for survival, and what this means mainly means conserving energy and avoiding risk. It means also avoiding uncertainty. So if there is something that needs significant effort or that puts us into uncertain situations, our brain interprets this as a threat to survival. And that's why you are so much against making those changes, because first of all, it needs help and it's also uncertain what would happen. So that's very much true, yes.
And this also brings up a thought that I have heard you say, it's don't step outside your comfort zone. As so many coaches and trainers say, you say expand your comfort zone. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. I think originally what those comfort zone ideas meant is that you have to step outside of your comfort zone to start something new. And that's obviously true, because almost by definition, if you start doing something that you haven't done before, then it is uncomfortable. But these thoughts or slogans were pushed too far, in my opinion. People started to think of discomfort as something that is inherently valuable, almost like that going through discomfort is some sort of growth strategy in itself. But that's definitely not true. If it was true that growth happened outside your comfort zone, then the best that we could do would be to stay in situations where we feel uncomfortable and inefficient and out of control. But that's not at all where high growth happens. High growth happens in environments when we feel in control and efficient, and when there is structure around us. So I think the true to improvement is not to stay outside your comfort zone forever. It is we need to step outside your comfort zone to start something new, but then you have to deliberately bring this new activity inside your comfort zone. So you have to expand your comfort zone though that now includes this new activity. Only then you can really become efficient and really feel that was an improvement. If we come back to this previous example that people are afraid to make the change, let's say they are afraid to leave this toxic workplace. Initially, it is uncomfortable to start in a new place or even to be unemployed for a short period of time. So you cannot continue being uncomfortable. You really have to work with this new position to make this new position comfortable. And that's only then you feel that you actually improved. Only then you feel growth. If you are equally uncomfortable in a new situation, then it's not really a growth.
Yeah, I think a lot visually. So I see the comfort zone is like a circle. And when I step outside my comfort zone, I'm out there. But what you're saying is bring this out there within the circle so that you expand it. Makes total sense. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. You are really inefficient when you are outside your comfort zone. Efficiency only happens inside comfort zone.
True. Wow. Now, you talk a lot about curiosity as well. And I love that, because I always say curiosity might kill the cat, but it has created so many success stories. So say more about your view on curiosity, please.
Yes, that is actually, I'm not sure whether you know it, but most people only know this first part of the phrase, curiosity kill the cat. There is also, there exists the second half, which is something that, but it also brought it back, or something like this, I don't remember exactly. I myself actually, while I didn't know the second part, I invented the second part as well. So my version goes like this, that curiosity killed the cat, but saved the cat guy, not mankind.
Yeah.
And indeed, I think it has two sides. Obviously, if you are curious in a bad sense, that you are putting your nose always in other people's business, then some people might not like it. But all of the most useful and revolutionary inventions have happened because of curiosity. So I'm always saying, don't judge curious minds too harshly, because these are the ones who are actually driving innovation. The world is better place mainly because humans have been curious.
There is one danger that I see with curiosity, and that happens to me as well, because I'm interested in almost everything. So if you ask myself, what are you interested in? It will be a long conversation. If you ask me, what are you not interested in? It's a short list. And I feel that this has really also impacted my career. It has impacted my life. So what's your take on that perspective of being too curious, maybe?
That's really interesting. I would say probably the easiest way is still to prioritize it somehow. You probably might be still more curious about something than something else, but also, I don't know, maybe it's possible that you are trying to convince yourself that you are indeed curious for all of those things, while it might not be true. I think a lot of people are making these mistakes. That's why I'm bringing this possibility up. Sometimes it's not so easy to understand whether you are curious or not, because sometimes, especially nowadays with social media, we so much like signaling to other people, like what do we do, what we are curious. So sometimes we are actually just mistaking a signal for action. So there is this one simple question that I often ask myself when I'm in doubt, whether I'm actually doing something because I'm curious or only doing it because I want to signal some sort of identity. There is this question that imagine there was nobody to see this achievement or this thing what you are doing, this activity what you are doing. Would you still do it? And if you would still do it, then yes, you are driven by genuinity. But if not, then maybe you have just convinced yourself that. But it's probably also possible that you indeed are curious about a lot of things. I'm also curious about a lot of things. So I guess it's very much possible. And it's not always easy indeed to focus on all of them. For me, it works in circles. I focus more on one thing and then I completely forget about it for some time and put focus on some other thing. I'm not able to do a lot of things at the same time. But I think I have heard that this is usually a male's issue, that females can do it. So maybe you can actually juggle many goals at the same time, but I have to just do it in cycles, focus on one thing, then another, and then come back to the first.
Yeah, and I think it's an illusion if we think that we can multitask, and science has proven that. So we might try, but it doesn't work. So it's the same probably for everyone. But that also brings up the point. I think you talk a lot about decision making. And what I'm hearing is I have to make a conscious decision of what I want to focus on and what I want to dig deeper into.
Yeah, I think in general, we humans are way worse decision makers than we think that we are. And it's mainly because of those cognitive distortions that I'm so focused on, because we are making those thinking errors without really realizing that we are making them. And these really sabotage our decisions and sabotage our goals. So that's why my focus really is on not working harder or suppressing emotion and digging through difficulties, but really to focus on removing the obstacles from our way, removing the thinking errors that we are consistently making and that are really sabotaging our own thinking. And if we are making thinking errors, then obviously also our decisions are wrong. And if decisions are wrong, then it's much less likely that we can achieve what we want to achieve. So my focus really, when it comes to decision making, is having this kind of clarity in your mind, identifying the true problem, and then next identifying the solution, which is nothing else than the solution to the problem that you identified, and then work backwards, figuring out the action steps that you have to get done in order to get from where you are to your solution.
So you're saying step out of the current situation and take on a meta perspective, look at it from the outside, and then look at what the solution might be, and then work backwards from there.
Stepping outside your own perspective is very useful in a lot of cases. I think most people almost never do it, and this is one of the reasons why we are so bad judging our own situation compared to judging other people's situation. And that's why I'm suggesting what they call the meta-level trick. This is basically just the ability to ask, if someone else was in my exact situation, what advice would I give them? And then that's the same advice I should give to myself. How we can try to counter this bias or this distortion that we are not able to evaluate our own situation objectively.
Yeah. And I think vision is already the second step. What I'm seeing is also that a lot of people have an issue or have not even tried to really be aware of what they do and how they act and how they think, and especially also how they feel. So I think a lot of it is around how does the situation make us feel, and how can we make sure that if we want to feel better, we work on that.
Yes, I completely agree. I think people are much less aware than they think they are. Most of us are thinking that we are very well aware, but probably it's not really true. If we come back to the same thinking errors, then we are doing them without knowing that we are doing them. And that's already one of the examples, how we are not as aware as we think we are. So, yeah, so getting rid of those errors would improve the awareness significantly.
Mm. Yeah, and it all comes back to what you said before, that our brain has the goal of surviving. So it's not looking for making us successful. It's looking for keeping us alive. And sometimes it takes turns where we think.
Exactly. That's the issue, that our brains evolved for survival, not for modern success. And survival, for most of human history, it meant avoiding risk and conserving energy. And that's what our brain wants us to do even today. But today's challenges often require completely opposite behaviors, like a sustained effort and long-term thinking. So there is a clear mismatch between how we should think and act to achieve our modern goals and what our brain tells us how we should think and act. And if we think of, for example, starting ambitious projects or learning new complicated skills, then these always seem harder for us than they objectively are. And the reason is exactly that our brain doesn't want us to engage in something that takes a lot of energy. So that's why it creates this kind of false illusion that it is so hard, we should not try at all, we should conserve energy. Indeed, most of those subtle distortions in our thinking are caused by evolution, because really our modern goals, they are so new. Just a few decades ago, a lot of them didn't even exist. And human evolution has been going on for millions of years. And most of this time, the main goal has been survival and conserving energy and avoiding risk. And evolution works so slowly that our brains really have not had yet enough time to help us with our modern goals. They are still applying the ancient survival mechanisms in the nowadays environment, which is not suitable for this at all.
Sure. Which also causes a lot of stress, because we'll get stressed about everything, and our brain and our body thinks it has to protect us by making us able to fight or flight. But reading an email would not require that.
Yes, exactly. We are very often just overprotecting us, because our brain interprets a lot of things as the survival. For example, uncertainty. In today's environment, uncertainty is very rarely the survival, but it used to be, because if there was for example, some new food source, it could be dangerous. Or if there was a new environment, there might have been predators lurking around. So it used to be potentially dangerous to survival. Today, it's not, but our brains still think.
Yeah. Now, as a last question, what should our listeners, our viewers do differently from today on? What is the one thing that you feel makes a huge difference?
I think one of the most important things is to understand that many of our limitations are structural, not external. They are caused exactly by evolution, by our brains being evolved for survival, not for modern success. And that's why there is this mismatch, and which causes thinking errors, which in turn tend to sabotage ourselves, our thinking and our goals. But the good news is that this mismatch is predictable. And once we recognize those patterns, those distortions, and are able to adjust our thinking, then success can become really a lot more predictable and less mysterious than it feels right now.
Okay, so what should people do?
I think they should start from trying to just watch themselves thinking. If they are able to observe their own thinking process, this is the first step. For example, after, let's say, some failure or some important decisions, most of the time we ask ourselves, how did it go? But this is not very helpful. Instead, if we could ask, what assumptions did I make? Or what might I have been misinterpreted? If we are able to ask these kinds of questions repeatedly, then over time we might start seeing some patterns. For example, it might turn out that we are taking feedback too personally, or that we are not evaluating outcomes, decisions independently of outcomes, that they are thinking that they are the same, or that we are overestimating difficulty. And once we see those patterns, then we can already start fixing them. But we have to be able to see them first.
Okay, so take one particular maybe decision that you've taken and almost a retrospective on it. So what worked?
Yes, try to think back of your thinking process. Why did you come up with this decision? And especially if it turned out to be wrong, not even if it turned out to be wrong, but whether you can identify some logical errors there, because sometimes the decision process itself is solid and the outcome is wrong. That's not the issue. The issue really is, if given the information that you had at the moment, whether your thinking process made sense. And if there is something that doesn't add up, then try to understand what it was. And if you see the same pattern repeatedly, then probably you have identified something. And this something might be what I already said, like not being able to evaluate decisions independently of outcomes. For example, you might think that the bad outcome means that the decision was bad, or that you are not thinking long term enough, that you are chasing some short term wins instead of building up long term position, which would allow you to achieve much more later. These kinds of patterns are not easy at all to see. So you really have to try to watch yourself thinking and find where your thinking went wrong, and then some patterns might start repeating, and then you recognize them, and then you can start with them. But there is also a little bit easier way. The easier way is to buy my book and follow the 10 rules. Then it'll be much easier.
Wonderful, wonderful. And that's a great finish for this conversation. So yes, absolutely, your book, Unlocking the Success Puzzle. I will link it in the show notes. And of course, I will also link your website, Andres Kusk, so that people can reach out to you if they want to have more success in their lives, because they start being more aware of how they think and how they make decisions, and hence can be maybe as successful as you are. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
This was Lead Well. Now, what is the one thing that you're taking away from this episode? Please share in the comments below, and do share the podcast with your friends and family, but only if you like it.